This is Peter Wise reading some extracts from my book, Disturbing the Water. This is an extract from Lost and Found. The hero of this story is Pavel, a lonely and troubled soul who grew up in a Romanian orphanage. In this scene, he's fishing on his own at night on a quiet, rural stretch of the River Thames. The evening drew on, and despite the promising conditions, no fish came to his bait. He was drifting off to sleep when he was stirred by what appeared to have been a cry. Alerted, he sat up. There it was again. It sounded like a baby. A fox? They have a wide repertoire of calls and cries for sure, some of them positively unearthly. But this noise really did sound like a human baby. As far as he could work out, it was right by the water's edge, a little way up the river.
Before we dive into the eerie tales of the past, I have some electrifying news to share with you. I'm excited to announce that the Haunted History Chronicles podcast now has its very own small shop of the macabre and mysterious. Picture this. Exclusive merchandise, hauntingly beautiful artwork, spine-tingling stickers, mugs that will make your morning coffee seem positively paranormal, and prints that capture the ghostly essence of days gone by. Whether you're a long-time listener of the show, or a newcomer drawn to the enigmatic allure of haunted history, the shop is your gateway to the supernatural. Imagine decorating your space with a piece of history, a connection to the spectral past. The merchandise is designed to evoke the very essence of the stories I share, making it an essential addition to your collection of all things eerie. You can find all these hair-raising treasures on the website, or simply follow the links conveniently placed in the podcast description notes. It's so easy, even a ghost could do it. So whether you're searching for the perfect addition to your haunted memorabilia collection, or just wanting to immerse yourself in the world of the supernatural, the shop is here to provide. Dive into the past, embrace the spook, and let the stories of history's ghosts haunt your space. So why not visit the shop today? And remember, the spirits of the past are waiting for you. The Haunted History Chronicles exclusive merchandise is just a click away. Happy shopping, and may the spirits be with you. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History Chronicles. First of all, thank you for taking a listen to this episode. Before we begin, I just want to throw out a few ways you can get involved and help support the show. We have a Patreon page as well as an Amazon link, so hopefully if you're interested in supporting, you can find a way that best suits you. All of the links for those can either be found in the show notes or over on the website. Of course, just continuing to help spread the word of the show on social media, leaving reviews, and sharing with friends and family is also a huge help. So thank you for all that you do. And now, let's get started by introducing today's podcast, or guest. Welcome to Haunted History Chronicles, the podcast that unravels the mystique and enigma woven into the annals of history and the supernatural. Today we delve into a profound connection that transcends time and cultures, a connection between water and mythology, a cosmic tapestry where ancient tales intermingle with the supernatural. Across the globe, myths abound about water spirits that dwell beneath the surface, beckoning us into their enigmatic depths. In Celtic folklore, there's a fearsome water horse lurking beneath the waves. German mythology speaks of shape-shifting water spirits known as Nyx, collectively known as the Neck. The Greeks regale us with nymphs and sea sirens, their enchanting songs luring sailors to their doom. The Romans, too, had their water goddesses, protectors of springs and fountains. Meanwhile, in Asian cultures, the waters conceal malevolent spirits, urging people to tread carefully, especially during the Hungry Ghost Festival. But water's significance goes beyond mythology. It flows through the veins of spirituality. Water is life itself, and its role in spiritual rituals and protections is profound. Baptismal waters signify divine life in Christianity, while water blessed by a priest offers spiritual protection against demonic forces. Moon water, charged by the radiant beams of the lunar goddess, is considered a source of potent magic and protection against spirits. It's also employed in healing, fertility, beauty, and emotional abundance. Water, so vital to our existence, sparks many supernatural questions and evokes wonder and awe. Joining me today is Peter Wise, an author whose words cast spells that enthrall the soul. His book, Disturbing the Water, is a collection of original short ghost stories that defy convention. These tales are not your typical haunted house narratives. They unfold in watery realms, are imbued with echoes of real history, including the English Civil War, World War II, and even a Victorian serial killer. Prepare for shivers along the water's edge and beyond. Published by Cranthorpe Milner Publishers, Disturbing the Water provides a unique gateway to realms where reality and the supernatural coexist. These tales promise to transport you to places where everything is not quite as it seems. As Chris Koppel, author of Lingering, Lifetimes, Lunacy and Last Light says, what a unique read. Wise has managed to create a delightfully creepy, yet mindfully enthralling bundle of stories. So, without further ado, let us welcome the talented author himself, Peter Wise, who will guide us through the watery depths of his intriguing tales and the ripples of mystery and the unknown. Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for joining me today. What did inspire you to want to write Disturbing the Water then, and combine this passion that you have for fishing alongside ghost stories? Because it's quite a unique angle to take.
Something at the back of my mind, and I left it at the back of my mind because writing fiction is pretty hard work for fairly uncertain returns. Most people don't make any money to speak of at it. So there it was at the back of my mind, and then we came to lockdown, and the immediate inspiration to another podcast, and it's got the two presenters, Tom Holland and Dominic Sandbrook, and they were talking away about this, and it struck me literally this thing. I'd never thought about it. Ghost stories and fishing. Actually, there is a connection there. Anglers do see a lot of ghosts. They claim to see a lot of ghosts. If you think about it, they're often in remote places as the light's fading. It's all, you know, it would be a bit mysterious. You know, you never quite know what you're going to catch when you're fishing anyway. And yeah, a lot of anglers do claim to have seen ghosts, but there hasn't really been much in the way. There's been the odd ghost story with a sort of watery setting, but no one has ghost stories to do with fishing. So I thought, yes, I can do that. And I literally, while I was still in the bath, I was thinking, crikey, that would be a really good idea for a book. And I resisted the temptation to sort of leap out of the bath like Archimedes and shout Eureka, you know, running around the streets naked. But by the end of the day, I thought, you know, I can write this, and I am going to write this. And so, you know, that's what I did.
I think it's a really interesting angle to take. Like I mentioned earlier, no pun intended, as you said, but there is very much this connection with water and theories around, you know, is that something that enhances supernatural activity? Like you mentioned, there's something very atmospheric about water, you know, the mist rising on the water. And so it is this perfect setting in so many different ways from so many different angles. And so it was a really refreshing and surprising read, because obviously having a great love of reading myself, whether that's fiction or non-fiction, having this interest in history and the paranormal and ghost stories, it actually surprised me, and I was quite struck by the fact that I had never made the connection, that I've never really read a collection of work of this kind before. It surprised me that it hasn't been done already. So it was so refreshing to have something different, and to have this unique angle that you've come at this from. It was something different. It was very much appreciated just for that alone.
Thank you. It's funny because, I mean, many ghosts are set around, you know, gothic houses, you know, certain famous waters which do, or about them, you know, have been fished by many generations of angler, had some kind of spiritual connection. You know, they might think of their now departed grandfather or uncle who taught them to fish. So there's a sort of romantic, imaginative strain, you know, character trait to anglers. Plus, of course, you know, they have a strong connection with the natural world. You know, they observe not just the water, bird life, plants and things like that, you know, and imaginations go wild. And, you know, if they have such a strong connection with the natural world, you know, perhaps the unnatural one might come calling now and again.
So who would you say the book is aimed at?
Anyone who likes ghost stories that I think will like more just tales with a twist. There is something in them for anglers, but they are, as I said, they're not angling stories. I mean, back in the day, I mean, I don't know if you've ever read any of the Dick Francis stories about horse racing. I have no interest in horse racing, but they're just good thrillers. These days, there's a very popular program on BBC called Mortimer and White Has Gone Fishing, you might have seen. They're very popular programs, but it's just the background, it's the setting. People who like history, you know, I wove in a lot of history to a lot of the stories. So there's sort of multiple audiences. You know, I'm very conscious of trying to satisfy multiple audiences. I mean, it sort of goes on the, as it were, the horror story, stroke ghost story shelf in the bookshelf, in the bookstore. But, you know, it's for more people than that. So I'm very conscious. There's nothing technical in the stories as regards fishing, in that you don't have to understand fishing. You don't even have to like it. You know, I think that there's something for a lot of people in here. Non-anglers have read the book and said how much they enjoyed it. It doesn't seem to be anyone who read it so far has not liked it. I mean, as you said, it was, hopefully it's a refreshing approach. You know, a different take from, you know, many of these traditional ghost stories, the settings. I'm hoping, you know, a lot of people will like it, and it'll make a great gift as well. It's coming out at Halloween, so sort of, you know, in the run-up to Christmas as well. So hopefully, you know, anyone who likes traditional type ghost stories, tales with a twist, not just anglers, bit of history, we'll enjoy it.
I think there's something familiar about it because of the setting and the landscape, the kind of the drawing of nature into it. There is something very, very familiar and comforting about that. And so it sets itself up as being something enjoyable and pleasant and serene and calm, all those things that you kind of think about when having lovely walks outside and enjoying the fresh air and just being able to have a good ramble about. But yet then you have this ghostly element that is this other element that is being brought in. And again, it's just so interesting to have these layers to a story that you think is going to be familiar in one sense and then takes you on this other path. And so, yes, it is very, it's very different to the typical type ghost story of the isolated gothic castle or mansion or manor house or family that's coming to stay. There's something about this that feels more isolated, out in the open, surrounded by nature. I mean, so many different things that just make it a little bit different. And as I said earlier, just refreshing, something really engaging for that, really.
Thank you.
So what would you say are some of the authors, you know, some of the ghost stories that influenced your approach to writing the collection of stories that are in this book?
Yeah, well, I read lots and lots of ghost stories of Jane. And I think if you had to choose one single ghost story author who most influenced me, you know, I read Orson Blackwood, a lot of modern short stories of all kinds, you know, not just necessarily ghost stories, literary ones.
And I would say that I echo that, because for several reasons, having read the stories in the book, they do follow that kind of classic journey of the ghost story that we're familiar with, you know, the things that we've really enjoyed, but yet it's your take on it, it's your stamp, you're bringing these unique elements in. And I think when you're putting together a collection, your own fictional accounts, each one different, you do need it to go somewhere, because if it just drifts off, like you mentioned, where the idea being maybe that the audience is supposed to take something from that, or it be left as that question unanswered type thing, when it just peters out and you feel like you haven't had things tied up and it's kind of the ending has somehow drifted away and left you unsatisfied, actually, when it's a collection of work, that's really disappointing, because it's very difficult to then go from one story to something else without still not being somehow invested in the one before and wanting more from that one. They have to stand as unique examples, don't they? Unique stories that you have that satisfactory conclusion to, so that you are then ready to start something completely new, because they are so very different. They're not in any way, shape or form something that's similar or echoes of some of a similar story earlier on in the book. They very much are standalone pieces.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, they have to be concluded before you can then go on to the next one.
That's it, absolutely. I mean, I really wanted, as I say, you know, this is my fiction day
to some extent, I'm
experimenting, but I really wanted a wide settings. I wanted
story types.
I mean, you've got several dread ones meddling where you shouldn't. But, you know, I also had, there were a couple of tales of redemption and of love. Fishing is, it tends to be mostly a male pursuit, but I was conscious I was writing that I needed to get a few female characters in there and, you know, again, make it much more about other things than the actual fishing. And as you found out, the Lady of the Stream, which one of our most beautiful fish, the grayling, suggested to me a certain ghost story. So I sort of took that one from there. This passage is from The Lady of the Stream. One of Britain's most beautiful freshwater fish, the grayling is known as the Lady of the Stream. But in this extract, set in the 1920s, the owner of a stretch of chalk stream encounters a rather different Lady of the Stream. In the stillness of the late autumn evening, the air was taking on a chill. The birds had now ceased their singing. The only sound was the gentle shimmer of the water where it shallowed and flowed over the larger stones lodged amidst the smooth gravel of the riverbed. The delicate scents of watercress and mint growing wild at the river's edge seemed to make themselves more apparent, sharpened by the cooling evening and by the lessening competition from the other senses. A mist was beginning to rise as Ashbridge cast an eye over his watery realm.
And you mentioned that obviously you very much brought in periods of history, historical context to certain stories within the book. Do you want to elaborate on that and share some of what inspired you, what history you drew from, you know, you drew from when crafting those stories alongside, you know, the supernatural elements in the tales themselves?
Yeah. So, you know, there were several who suggested themselves. I studied
university
witch craze.
the stories.
Not a ghost from that period. The Civil War
was always
popular with everyone.
Well, I think if the history is right, it actually makes the story so much more authentic, because you are drawing on very real places, events, people, the types of experiences, superstitions, all of those things, when researched and crafted really well into a story, makes the detail that just helps it to really come to life. And I get really frustrated when, like you mentioned, when they're reimagined and you have something completely inaccurate and removed from what actually happened, whether it's film or book. I just find myself wanting to close the book or stop watching it because it's frustrating. The real stuff is actually far more interesting and far more engaging. And again, I think it's what also is a big draw to this book, the fact that you do dip into different historical periods. And again, for that reason, each story is very unique. And it's almost a journey through some of these different times, these different elements, that also allows you to then draw on other types of ghost story tropes and like we've mentioned, other types of journeys of a ghost story. And again, that's really, really refreshing. It means you're coming at each new story very much excited, because you know you're going to be getting something very different, and you're going to be stepping into a new world, a new landscape, even though there is some threads that are there throughout. Each still feels very, very new that you're experiencing for the first time again.
I'd say.
You've obviously mentioned wanting to get that history right and the importance of that, which, as I say, I echo. What was your process when kind of conducting some of that research? You know, what were some of the difficulties? You know, what was your approach? And did you make any discoveries along the way yourself whilst preparing to write?
All sorts of things. You know, I had the basic ideas, and I researched them, I researched them.
Got the history.
I also wove in a legend, bits and things like that associated with water in Middle Europe. It's something called a Rusalka, which is a water spirit. So that again came into the story.
To celebrate heading into the spookier season, autumn nights, howling wind and freezing rain, Halloween spookiness in the dark depths of winter, Haunted History Chronicles will be posting daily podcasts on Patreon, on all tiers over there, as well as the usual additional items offered. Signing up now will gain you access to these, as well as all previous archived content. For as little as £1, you could be getting hundreds of podcasts to enjoy, writing, source material, and more, and know that you are contributing and helping the podcast to continue to put out more content. You can find the link in the episode description notes, as well as on the Haunted History Chronicles website or social media. So why not come along to enjoy a rich web of accounts perfect for this season? Dark tales of corpses, ghosts, folklore, Christmas and Halloween macabre traditions and connections, and a whole lot more. And now, let's head back to the podcast.
This scene is from The Village Beneath. It's the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and in defiance of lockdown, a Welsh angler called Rhys has decided to go and fish a mysterious and deep lake in the middle of a forest. He's hooked something, but it's not a fish. Slowly, Rhys reeled in the line, the end of his fishing rod bent over under the dead weight. Expecting a tree branch to emerge once he'd brought it to the water's edge, he was surprised to see that it appeared to be some kind of solid object, perhaps 8 inches long. Setting down his rod, he started to examine what he had caught. It took a while for him to work out what it was, even after he had wiped off the debris that clung to its surface. It seemed to be a bottle of some kind, thick, heavy and very old. By its neck there was a small loop, just big enough to put a couple of fingers through.
So I mean, I think it's fairly clear from what we've been discussing that, you know, these cultural, these regional legends, these stories, these tropes, whether it's folklore tropes or ghost lore tropes, are so common in England. And there can be very subtle variations. There are things that we can recognize, and they get drawn upon in so many different ways, don't they? Mm-hmm. And you can see very much the influence of that within the book itself.
Mm.
Were there other kind of tropes that you drew upon, any specific tales, any specific folklore that you really were inspired by, that helped you to kind of weave your stories, craft your stories?
Some of them it was local events, perhaps more than local folklore. I mean, there's one in Irish Loch, and people who know that area
were,
but it's essentially Loch Corrib. And the sort of the inspiration from that, I've fished there many times, I know well.
I think, again, though, it makes it interesting in the sense that there are things that feel very familiar, and you kind of have echoes of stories that it connects with, or things that it reminds you of, or a location that it reminds you of, a place that you've visited or you've heard about, or a story that you've heard about involving something similar, and yet again just so completely different because you've taken threads and elements of these to create something very different and unique, and you know, it's been used as inspiration to springboard from. And again, that's the interesting bit, because in some ways you come at a story sometimes, don't you, where you have a perception of where you think it's going, but these don't go where you think they're going to go. And so that's, again, just a really interesting and engaging experience to be part of, that you have something that feels familiar to you, that feels reminiscent of somewhere that you've been, and yet you then have something very surprising along the way. And so, yeah, it's totally immersive in that regard. You have enough to feel like you're somewhere that you know, and yet you go on this completely other new experience, unexpected, that's quite jarring, and very, very much that feel that you want from a really good ghost story that takes you on this journey of this building suspense that's so classic for what makes a good hallmark of a ghost story.
Yeah. I mean, there was one story actually which was going to be exactly like that. As I say, I like to plot. I mean, they say there are two, there are the plotters and the pantsers, and the plotters are the ones who work out everything before they start writing, and the pantsers are the ones who just start writing and do it all by the seat of their pants. But I'm very much a plotter. But I mean, the exception to that, that there was one story called Over the Edge, and I had it all worked out, and that was going to be a typical sort of tale of, you know, a fussy protagonist, mounting dread, and the basic thrust of the attempt to recreate the kind of baits that were used by anglers and writers in history, such as Isaac Walton, the chap who wrote The Complete Angler in the 17th century. You know, a classic tale of mounting tension, and in some ways it still is. But as I was writing it, I realised it would actually work better as a comedic tale of misadventure. So that's what it became. It became mounting weirdness rather than mounting chills. So that one was a bit different. But yeah, most of the others are much more of a classic sort of thing. And, there were a couple which implied ghosts. You don't see them. Some have ghosts, most have some ghosts or supernatural element. You mentioned about writers that influenced me. There's a well-known William Hope Hodgson created a ghostly detective called Carnacki. I don't know if you've come across any of those stories, but there's about a dozen stories. And a ghost story, there are manifestations. I like that. I like the fact you go into the car and you never quite know what's going to happen. And again, in my stories, yes, they're mostly traditional ghost stories, but in a couple of cases, you know, there are red herrings, as it were, and it ends up something a little bit different.
part of what you've done really well is creating and crafting those supernatural elements, the characters. Because again, it doesn't feel like, well, you're just replicating what you've done in one of the stories and just putting it into another story with a different title, a different location, and a slight, you know, slightly different backdrop. Each is very, very different again. And so that process of creating those ghostly elements, the ghostly characters, the phenomena, is something that you've obviously spent a lot of time thinking about and again planning for, of how you want to build that in, how you want to take that journey with the audience, how you want to start building that tension, how you want to start presenting something and then escalating that mounting sense of heading somewhere. Do you want to just explain some of that process of how you developed those characters and the phenomena? What it, you know, anything that you were thinking about or mindful of or trying to do as part of that planning process to try and create that little bit of supernatural magic, really?
I wanted different types of ghosts. You've got malevolent ghosts. You've got a couple of benevolent ghosts and things like that.
And, you know, something that just I think is really important to kind of recognize about the different locations that you've created and used in this is that there's obviously nods to places that are familiar to you or to that would be familiar to anglers. But it's not something that would exclude people from being able to read this book in the sense that it's not aimed at people specific to readers from the United Kingdom, for example. This is something that really is universal because there are settings like, you know, I've tried to kind of convey in this chat with you. These are settings that are familiar because they will remind you of places that you've been to or places you drive past, you walk past, stories that are familiar to you. There are things in here that will really draw you in. And I think that will be quite unique in the sense that I'll read this and it will remind me of somewhere or a story that is unique for me. Someone else reading it is going to take away very different threads from the story. But there is enough, I think, in each of them that really will inspire so many people for lots and lots of different reasons. And again, I think that's a universal quality that makes them very engaging and interesting stories.
This scene comes from the story Wrecking. Four friends are in a small boat off the coast of North Cornwall. They're fishing over a wreck, a natural holding place for fish. However, this is not just any old wreck, but a U-boat lost in the war. And conditions are taking a turn for the worse. "Right, time to lift the anchor. We need to get out of here, fast," said Brian. And he wasn't wrong. By now the fog was thickening. But when he tried to haul the anchor, nothing happened. It was stuck fast. "Hang on, I'll bring around and change the angle." A note of concern was starting to enter Brian's voice. But that didn't work either. For a couple of minutes he tried every trick he knew. Changing angles, slackening, then tightening the chain. By now, the boat was enveloped in a grey blanket of invisibility. All was silent for a while, as if the fog had shrouded sound itself.
Do you have any plans to revisit the topic? And, you know, do something in the future with this type of writing and this type of genre? Are you going to be branching off into something different? What's your next steps?
Well, obviously I will see how it works. If it does work, I do have enough ideas to sort of do more of the same, which would be great. Obviously I want to see which of the stories have most resonance.
Yeah, first dipping the toe into fiction, I can understand.
Yeah.
But no, honestly, I think it's a really, really great read. I think there will be people coming at this from so many different angles who will really enjoy each story. I mean, it's a real pleasure to read. I found myself There's something meditative about it. And I think that's partly because of the locations and how they're weaved in.
Yeah.
There is that quietness, that gentleness to it. And like I said, then this jarring supernatural element that is kind of being woven in alongside that. And so it is this very interesting blend of something that you are expecting with something totally unexpected. And so it was something I was really eagerly looking forward to after a very long, busy, hectic, crazy day sometimes, to just have that moment of quiet to myself where I could dip my toe into a location that had this wonderful, relaxing, meditative feel, and then knew that there was going to be something coming, but not knowing what, having no clue what, was the really exciting bit that I was eagerly waiting for.
As you
do with any good kind of scary story or ghost story or anything like that, you're actually waiting for the twist. You're waiting for the bit, aren't you? And so, yeah, it was really, really pleasurable to dive into that and to have the chance to read it. So thank you so much for writing and sharing it. I think people will really enjoy it. As I said, each story is so unique. You feel like you're getting something very new each time, and you're just able to step into a world that feels very different, that's been very carefully crafted and pieced together, so that you do go on this journey and you're left at the end feeling like you've had a really good story that you've been part of, that you felt very much immersed in. So it's a lot of hard work that's been put into each one, I think, to make them very unique and individual in their own right, but at the same time have that overarching feel of they're all connected by some threads, which is the setting, the connection with water, the connection with these supernatural elements. Even though they're different, it's still there. There is very much a journey that you go on from each story individually. I think it's a magical experience and one that I think people will really enjoy. So thank you for coming along today and kind of sharing some of that so that people are aware of the book, really. I really appreciate you giving up the time to come and chat with me.
And I really appreciate you interviewing me. So thank you very much, Michelle. No, I very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
And I will say goodbye to everybody listening. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.